This is a CBC podcast.
Hey, I'm Craig Norris, and I want to invite you to check out the R330. It's kind of like Quirks and Quarks, except I don't talk about space or science or anything like that. Instead, I play the week's best Canadian indie music. Head over to cbcradio3.com for all of the info.
Hello, and welcome to the Vinyl Cafe podcast. We publish a new podcast every weekend. You can download the latest or subscribe to the Vinyl Cafe podcast at cbc.ca/podcasting. This week on the show, Dave and the Rat.
Dave was at Kenny Wong's cafe. He was sitting at the counter. He was eating a bowl of rice pudding and reading the latest issue of Under the Radar. When Kenny banged through the swinging kitchen doors carrying two big paper bags, a takeout order. Kenny stopped dead when he was beside Dave's stool and without turning to look at him, standing right behind him but staring straight ahead, Kenny said, "That's your second bowl of pudding." Dave said, "No, it isn't." Kenny said, "It is so. You got up when I was in the kitchen and you got yourself a second bowl." Dave didn't turn around to look at Kenny. And Kenny, who was still looking straight ahead, not looking at Dave, sounded mildly threatening. It was hard to tell if this was a game or something serious. If this was the Wild West, you'd be looking around for something to duck under when the shooting began. And then Dave, who had put his spoon down and was staring at his hands, said, "It's not my second bowl." Kenny said, "Liar." And everyone in the place stopped talking. Everyone was listening now. And you're thinking, here come the guns. When Carl Lobier, who was sitting in a booth by the wall, piped up, Carl said, "It's not his second bowl." And Dave spun around on his stool to face Kenny, grinning like a school kid. "See," said Dave. But Carl wasn't finished. Carl said, "It's his third." An hour later, the place was mostly empty. Even Carl was long gone. But Dave was still sitting there, still reading, with what looked like a fourth bowl of rice pudding in front of him. Kenny was there too. Kenny, right in the middle of the cafe with his feet up on his desk. Kenny says, "Okay, I've been thinking about this. I've decided next Thursday's my fake birthday." "Come on," says Dave. "We just got through Christmas." Kenny and Dave have this thing about birthdays. I'm not sure how long it's been going, a long time. Once a year, whenever they feel like it, they're allowed to declare it's their birthday, and the other guy has to take fake birthday guy out to lunch. And give him a present. According to the rules, they can declare any day of the year their fake birthday. Except, of course, if it's their real birthday, which they're not allowed to mention, never, ever. They just observe their fake birthday. And that's how Dave ended up at the mall last weekend, looking to find Kenny a fake birthday present. It's something he's been surprisingly good at over the years. Dave's presents have always been, are always, unexpected, in the best possible way. They have been, when they've been good, something Kenny would never have bought himself but really wanted. And when they've been great, well, when they've been great, they've been something Kenny didn't have a clue he wanted. But once he got it, wondered how he had lived without it all his life. Truth is, Kenny looks forward to Dave's fake birthday present every year. Dave knows that. And as you all know, the great difficulty with great success is the great difficulty of repeating it. Which is why Dave was feeling so much pressure at the mall last weekend, wandering around looking for inspiration. He stopped to get himself a coffee. He was standing at the coffee counter, pouring a creamer into his takeout cup, when he spotted the pet store. Which is when Dave remembered the greatest present that he had ever bought. Wasn't for Kenny. It was for his son, Sam. It was Christmas time, and Dave had been standing at the very same coffee counter, trying to do what all kids dread, trying to come up with a present that wasn't on Sam's Christmas list. And that's when he spotted the pet store. Perfect, he muttered. So perfect, he walked right in without taking his coffee with him. So perfect, he forgot his coffee on the counter. He was thinking something simple as he walked through the door, thinking goldfish or maybe turtle. And then he wound around one of the aisles and he bumped right into Rat Man. Guy standing there in the middle of the store holding two rats in his hand, and there was one on his shoulder, and Dave's heart started to pound. Dave is terrified of rats, phobic even. Ever since the morning when he woke up on Vincent Fernier's couch with a rat perched on his chest. How was Dave supposed to know it was Vince's pet? When Dave woke up, the rat was finishing off a piece of pizza that Dave had been working on when he dozed off. But that was way, way back. Way back before Vince got famous and changed his name to Alice. All Dave remembered was waking up and staring into those beady little eyes. He'd never gotten over it. Just the thought of rats creeped him out. He'd lie in bed at night listening for them. Morley eventually got used to it. And then she got tired of it. The furnace would bump on and Dave would lurch awake. "Did you hear that?" he'd ask, shaking her. "Don't worry, sweetie," she'd say, rolling over. "It's only a rat." Morley was right. She was. The rat thing had gotten out of hand. The little seed of fear planted on Vince's couch so many years ago had overtaken Dave. Every strange noise felt like a threat. At some crazy level, Dave believed that there was an army of rats mustering somewhere, and at any moment, probably at night, was going to corner him in some small, dark place. He knew he was being crazy. He knew he had to get over this. Dave stared at the rat man. There was a group of boys Sam's age gathered around him. Each boy was holding a rat. Maybe buying a nice, clean pet store rat would help. Sam would love it. And maybe Dave could learn to. The idea horrified him. He took a deep breath and closed his eyes. 5 minutes later, Dave was walking out of the pet store with a 5-pound bag of cedar shavings and a small cardboard box. The gift-wrapped lady was an older woman. She was wearing a red reindeer cardigan. Snowman earrings. It took Dave 15 minutes and $20 extra to convince the lady to wrap the rat. When he got to his car, he checked to make sure the air holes in the gift wrap were still open. Then he placed the wrapped rat on the back seat. The chewing started a few minutes later. Dave adjusted the rearview mirror so he could see into the back. The box was moving around on the back seat. It looked like a wind-up toy. And there was a small pink nose popping out of the paper. The rat was chewing its way to freedom. Dave stepped on the gas. He had to get home quickly. He covered a block and glanced back in the mirror. Now he could see a nose and whiskers. A block later, an entire rat face. And then there was no rat at all. All there was a great empty hole in the box. A hole in the box and a rustling under his seat. This was Dave's worst nightmare. Traffic was slowing up ahead. The brake lights on the car in front of him flashed. Dave was so preoccupied he almost missed them. He looked up. And he forgot about the rat, and he stepped down on the brake. Exactly. There was a loud squeak, And then Dave felt something rip into his ankle. He looked down and he saw the rat's tail disappearing under his seat. He pulled over to the curb and he jumped out of the car and he stood there for a moment not knowing what to do. There was no choice, he knew that. If he was going to face his fear, this was the moment. Dave spent the next 10 minutes scrambling around his car, back and forth from front to back, grasping and lunging like he was playing a game of squash. Eventually he got it. Eventually Dave was sitting in the front seat holding the quivering rat. Rat was quivering, Dave was panting, and the box was finished. Now what? Dave settled on the only sensible solution, the trunk. There was plenty of room in the trunk. He got out of the car, keys in one hand, rat in the other, and he placed the rat beside a box of old records and he closed the trunk. He wasn't that far from home. And what else could he do? He pulled away from the curb, but he was anxious. What if the rat was getting bounced around? What if the crate of records slid over and crushed it? Halfway home, Dave pulled over again. When he opened the trunk, he couldn't see a rat anywhere. The only thing worse than having a rat loose in your trunk was losing the rat in your trunk. It could be anywhere. Dave shut the trunk quickly and felt a wave of dread. He was parked on the side of a residential street, not far from his own neighborhood. He was parked by the curb in the dark spot between two streetlights. Now, there are in the trunk of any car the size of Dave's, even under the best of conditions, there are a lot of dark spots, a lot of nooks and a lot of crannies, not to mention rags and cans and half-full boxes of records, lots of places where a rat could disappear. Probably the rat was hiding. He had to find it. He looked down the street anxiously. There was a man at the end of the block walking a dog, but there weren't any rats in sight. He stood by the trunk again and stared at the mess of his life. Why were these things always happening to him? Why wasn't his trunk better organized? Okay, thought Dave, this is it. Get a grip, a systematic search, work from one side to the other. And it was while Dave was leaning in on the curbside of his trunk, shifting boxes around, that it occurred to him that the rat could just as easily be on the other side of the trunk. And could just as easily, while Dave was looking here on this side, make a break from over there on that side. And without pausing to think about what he was doing, acting rather than thinking, oh yes, Dave climbed into his trunk. No rat was getting out of his trunk unless he let it out. He reached up and he pulled the hood closed behind him. His first thought was, I probably shouldn't have pulled that quite so firmly. He reached up in the sudden darkness and he pushed against the roof with his hand. Okay, he said, deep breath. Lots of people get locked in their trunks. He was going to be fine. He wasn't going to die, just as long as he didn't panic. 2 minutes later, Dave was thrashing about, yelling and pounding on the roof of the trunk. He was lurching around in the darkness like a load of laundry. It was Christmas Eve. The street was almost empty. An 8-year-old boy and his mother were walking on the opposite side of the road. I think, said the boy, pointing at Dave's car, I think there's a body in that trunk. I think the body is talking. The mother reached out for her son's hand. Inside the dark trunk, Dave stopped his pounding. The mother listened. She didn't hear anything. That's it, young man, said the mother. No more TV for you. And they disappeared down the sidewalk. Inside the trunk, Dave was trying to get a grip. Think. His cell phone. He had his cell phone with him. Why hadn't he thought of that? He squirmed around so he was lying on his back. It was frighteningly dark. He was horribly cramped, but he had his phone. He worked it out of his pocket and he flipped it open. The trunk was bathed in a dim gray light. That was better. He could deal with this. And then Jesus, Mary, and Joseph. There was something staring at him. He was trapped in a trunk, and all he could see were a pair of beady eyes staring at him. They were just like those pizza eyes, and they were getting closer. He was going to be eaten alive, just like that piece of pizza. In his panic, he threw the phone. Okay, where was the phone? Get the phone. Okay, he had the phone. Who was he going to phone? He certainly wasn't going to phone Morley. The police. He had phoned the police. The call didn't go as smoothly as you might expect. You try explaining to a police dispatcher that you locked yourself in the trunk of your car because you've climbed in there looking for a rat. It would have made things a lot easier if Dave knew what street he was on. He knew the general vicinity. The police sent a car. They turned on their siren and drove around the neighborhood. "I hear it," said Dave glumly. "It sounds like you're a couple of streets over." "Marco," said the cop. "Polo," said Dave glumly. Of course, there's nothing like a siren to attract a crowd. When Dave emerged from the trunk, he was clutching the rat like a child's toy. And sure enough, there was a crowd watching from the sidewalk, three of them young women. As Dave climbed out, he heard one of the young women say, "Hey, isn't that Stephanie's dad?" The crowd soon drifted away, and Dave stood there by his car, the rat quivering. Dave brought it up to his face and blew on its head. The rat nuzzled Dave's neck. It was sort of cute. He certainly wasn't going to put it back in the trunk. And the cop wouldn't let Dave drive home with a loose rat in his car. "Well," said Dave. The cop gave Dave and the rat a ride home. But he made them sit in the back behind the barrier. As they pulled into the driveway, Dave could see Sam peering at them through the living room window. Dave leaned forward in his seat and he tapped on the barrier lightly. "Hey," he said to the police officer, "can you do me one more favor?" The next morning, Sam was so excited about Dave's present that Morley could barely get him to open any of his other gifts. His father had given him a rat, and not just any rat. As Sam told everyone, his dad had given him an official, licensed, certified police rat. And it was delivered by a squad car, by a real police officer with a badge. It was the perfect gift. And that's what Dave got Kenny for his birthday this year, a rat like Sam's. This time he bought a cage, too. He gave it to Kenny at lunch. "It's an official police rat," he said. Kenny said, "What do I want with a rat? I run a restaurant." "Sit down," said Dave, smiling. "I'm going to tell you about it. It's a long story."
That was Stuart McLean, and that's from the Vinyl Cafe. Stuart McLean and special musical guests Megan Smith and Matt Anderson head out on tour in a couple of weeks. They'll be doing live Vinyl Cafe concerts in Nova Scotia, New Brunswick, Prince Edward Island, and Maine, making stops in Orono, Portland, Charlottetown, Miramichi, Fredericton, St. John, Summerside, Moncton, Port Hawkesbury, Glace Bay, Truro, Wolfville, and Halifax. You can check the details on the website vinylcafe.com.
For more on all of our CBC podcasts, head to cbc.ca/podcasting.